Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition on a Thursday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. Jason has the night off. We have a packed show for you today, so let's get straight to it. It's Thursday on the local edition, and of course, we have the one and only Philip Pontuso on the phone with us now. Philip Pontuso from the Times Union, the Hudson Valley Bureau. And the first up, we could talk about what's happening with the village of South Blooming Grove, which it seems like they prevented or supposedly prevented voters from getting to the polls and held an election. And the state probe is uncovering evidence pointing to interference. Philip, welcome to the program. What can you tell us about this story?
So this is a story that's kind of been in the news for a few days now, but we were able to advance it a little bit with some of our reporting that published on Wednesday. I think we were the first to confirm that the state attorney general's office is looking into this. But essentially, the village of South Blooming Grove, which is a heavily Orthodox Jewish community in Orange County, held its village elections on October 22nd, so about 6 weeks ago. And they had only 132 voters turn out for that election, which it was just 6% of those who are registered to vote. There are about 4,000 people who live there. And so that on its own was fishy. And after the election, a number of residents there complained to their representative, State Senator James Skoufis, who just happens to chair the Senate's Investigations Committee, saying, hey, we didn't even know this election was happening. Can you look into this? The state Senate opened an investigation doing just that. And what they found is that the village board had moved the election up to October 22nd from when it had been scheduled, which was for next March 2026. And they did that in a meeting, a special meeting that was not on the calendar that they announced with only 1 hour's notice. They had also switched the official newspaper, the paper of record where municipalities post public notices, to a weekly paper outside the local readership area. So those, to the Senate Investigation Committee anyway, seemed like clearly designed to sort of hide the fact that they were moving this election up by 6 months or so, or 5 months. So this investigation turned up other pieces of evidence suggesting that this was an intentional attempt to suppress voter turnout. I think it's worth noting as well that in October, the yeshivas in South Blooming Grove are closed. There just wasn't as much activity, probably not even as many people in the village when this election was going on. But some of the other evidence that they found were that they stopped posting meeting minutes, which is mandated by state law, and they made no mention of the election on their website, social media, in any kind of official emails or text messages, or by sending out any mailers. And during this investigation, state Senate investigators also had a phone interview with an unnamed village official who admitted that the election was moved to October due to the closure of local yeshivas. That's according to Senator Skoufis. So he took all of the Senate Investigations Committee took all of this material, has sent it up to the Attorney General's office, and Skoufis is asking that office to initiate what's called a quo warranto proceeding, which is a legal action that would essentially allow the state to invalidate these election results. He said that basically, this was a sort of undemocratic attempt to suppress voter turnout. And so the Attorney General's office is looking into it. They haven't said yet whether they're going to do that or whether they'll actually open like a formal investigation, but they are indeed looking into it.
Yeah. And what are the consequences for the village if it's found out that all this stuff they did was illegal and this election was not valid?
It sort of depends what pathway the Attorney General's office takes. Like at minimum, if the Attorney General's office invalidates the results of the October 22nd election, then the village will be forced to schedule a new election. And I'm sure there will be a lot of scrutiny to make sure that they do things that are already required by law, such as posting meeting minutes and having proper sort of disclosure or meeting the proper disclosure requirements. If the Attorney General's office finds that that someone here committed some kind of criminal activity, which nobody's quite alleging yet, then there may be further consequences. But at the moment, no one is exactly on the hook with any kind of like criminal liability or even any sort of civil fine. Though I would imagine that the current village board members who oversaw this process will be subject to some additional scrutiny by their constituents there in the village who can make their voices heard at the ballot box.
Yeah, and this is not the first time that South Bloomingdale has been in the news. Just doing a quick Google search, I saw some other things that they were being in the news for over the developers and things like that. So,
yeah, there's a long kind of history there of tension, let's call it, between some of the elected officials and the Orthodox communities. This just sort of is the latest in that story.
Yeah. So another story that we've been watching here is in Orange County about this Amazon mega warehouse. A state-appointed watchdog has vetoed a major tax incentive package for a proposed Amazon mega warehouse project in Orange County. Development leaders say that the veto is politically motivated and unfounded, while critics argue it's necessary safeguard against a reckless giveaway. What can you tell us about this mega warehouse and what are the arguments for and against offering Amazon this tax break in the first place?
Yeah, this is a complicated story, but basically Amazon is proposing this 3.2 million square foot warehouse in the town of Wabayanda, where that to use as a sort of distribution facility. And the County Industrial Development Agency, which is the authority that oversees these kind of large development projects, voted to give Amazon a tax break for that under what's called a payment in lieu of taxes or pilot agreement. Under this agreement, they would have paid about $48 million in taxes in a lump sum payment to Orange County, to the Minisink Valley Central School District, and to the town of Wabayanda. And they pay it to the town and the school district because those, you know, they're making these payments in lieu of property tax payments, which of course also go to town and school towns and school districts. That $48 million payment would have amounted to about $80 million in savings over the 15-year period of the pilot agreement. And, you know, there's a lot of controversy over these kind of pilot deals in general. You know, a lot of people think that they essentially amount to a handout to developers, development advocates, or people who say that these kinds of things, these pilot deals are good. They say that they're necessary because they're an incentive to attract developers to put big projects in your town as opposed to the town over, right? And obviously there's downstream economic benefits of that in the form of job creation and sort of, you know, ancillary spending that comes from those jobs being created. Nevertheless, I would say that tax breaks that the Orange County IDA in particular hands out have been subjected to a lot of scrutiny because of a lot of allegations of corruption within that agency. Circling back to Senator Skoufis here, probably the thing he has been most focused on since he's chaired the Senate Investigations Committee is how these IDAs use and in his case, or in his word, abuse their authority to hand out these tax breaks. And he's taken a particular interest in Orange County. And we have a lot of reporting on that. I won't get into all of it here, but suffice to say, due to the Senate Investigations Committee's investigations of the Orange County Industrial Development Agency, about a year or so ago, the state appointed a watchdog who essentially monitors what they're doing. It's kind of like an ombudsman who is just sort of making sure that everything is above board there. And when this tax break was approved a month or so ago, we've all been kind of waiting to see what the monitor would say about that. And we finally got word on that late last week. He said he rejected the deal because for kind of a technical reason, actually. He said that both Amazon and the Orange County IDA had, quote, failed to provide adequate responses to his questions during the review period. It's not clear to us whether he objected to the terms of the deal itself. He didn't comment to our reporter when we reached out to him, basically said that he had not received sufficient information to make an informed decision. But of course, both Amazon and the Orange County IDA are firing back at him, saying that, on Monday, the Orange County IDA chief said that the veto is invalid because it arrived past the deadline and was, quote, completely devoid of any rational basis. And Amazon, through a spokesperson, told us that the monitor's decision was wrong procedurally and on the facts.
So what happens now with this project? Is sort of dead in the water now, or can it be renegotiated or revived?
It remains to be seen. We're in a kind of state of limbo right now. Amazon said that it's working with the IDA to determine what its next steps are. Because it's not clear to us exactly on what basis, other than this mere technicality, the deal was rejected, there may be some way that the monitor's concerns can be addressed, in which case the deal can move forward with this exact same tax break or maybe a modified version of the tax break. Conversely, Amazon and the IDA may be able to convince the state that this veto is in fact invalid and that, you know, this tax break was approved. It went through all the proper channels. There's this kind of extra watchdog layer on top that Orange County has to face that most other counties don't. And, you know, they may be able to make a successful case that that veto doesn't hold water now. We just don't know at this point. Yeah. So obviously something that we're going to keep watching.
It's been a big story for a while. It was part of our conversation, my conversation with both candidates running for county executive, Steve Newhouse and Michael Sussman. Was one of the big things was they talked about, both of them talked about, was the warehouse. One talked about, Michael Sussman talked a lot about how it was unnecessary and also talked about against the tax breaks. And Steve Newhouse talked a lot about the jobs it would potentially create. But so definitely keep us up to date on this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, warehouse development, Orange County has been positioning itself as a kind of hub of this kind of large warehouse developments. It's particularly well suited for logistics, I think, because I-84 runs through there and I-87 and, you know, some of the longer and wider state routes as well. But yeah, you know, there are critics of this type of development, not just the tax breaks themselves, but they say that there are environmental issues, that there's some quality of life issues, et cetera. So yeah, it was probably the main issue in the Orange County executive's race.
You're listening to The Local Edition on a Thursday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Arroballo. We're talking to the managing editor for the Times Union, the Hudson Valley Bureau, Philip Pantuso. We'll be back right after this with some more news. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I think this is a really painful question that Somali immigrants are now wrestling with is, you know, what do you do to prove that you're an American? Like, to what lengths do you need to go to truly feel like you belong and that you're part of the fabric of this nation?
I'm Natalie Kitroev. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
This week on Science Friday, a controversial plan to save the spotted owl is pitting owl lovers against owl lovers.
It is almost assured that we will, in fact, lose the spotted owl if we do not control barred owls.
Plus, scientists hatch a plan to conserve microbes, but how would it work? All on Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
This week on CatsCast, a shop in Catskill that sells vintage Catskills.
You told me 4 years ago I'd have a retail shop on Main Street. I'm like, you're crazy, because it's not something that was ever on my radar.
Plus, a community-based all-volunteer organization helping seniors who wish to remain safe and comfortable in their own homes.
They're just very good people.
Saturday at 11 a.m. right here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to The Local Edition on a Thursday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. We're continuing our conversation with the managing editor from the Hudson Valley Bureau of the Times Union. Let's talk about immigration and naturalization. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services has been canceling upcoming naturalization ceremonies in at least 3 New York counties, saying not enough eligible candidates. What are you hearing from local officials, Philip, who are expecting these naturalization ceremonies to happen, and which actually is going on? And now with the Trump going on with immigration and crackdowns, especially after what happened in D.C. with the Afghan national allegedly shot 2 National Guards last week, killing one of them.
Yeah, I mean, if this sounds familiar, it's because we've sort of been here before. A few weeks ago, we broke this story that USCIS, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services had canceled upcoming naturalization ceremonies in at least 7 New York counties, and those cancellations were done indefinitely. And these are the ceremonies. This is basically the last step by which a green card holder becomes a U.S. citizen. It's the kind of cliche thing where you have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people gathered in a room. They take the oath of allegiance. They're really a kind of like emotional ceremonies for anybody who's been to them. And when the Trump administration canceled these ceremonies a couple of weeks ago, they didn't really offer any explanation other than like sort of, you know, they just didn't offer any explanation at all, frankly. And so we reported on this, and that received widespread criticism from both sides of the aisle. In particular, Mike Lawler, the Republican who represents Rockland County, was quite outspoken about this, in part because naturalization ceremonies in his district have been canceled, and in part because he's been pretty outspoken in the past about some of the difficulties of navigating the U.S. immigration system that his wife, who's from Moldova, faced on her pathway to becoming a citizen. So following all that, USCIS reversed its policy and reinstated these naturalization ceremonies. But then earlier this week, we heard that they had begun canceling them again. And so far, we've confirmed that this is in Ulster, Dutchess, and Putnam counties. And it's a slightly different story than before, at least in the details. They're only canceling the December ceremonies in each of these places, saying that future ones are not yet canceled. And they're saying it's because they don't have enough candidates, but all the county clerks we talked to who administer these ceremonies locally said that that seems pretty unusual because they've had long wait lists for people who want to become citizens and have gone through the process. Now, technically, it's USCIS who knows who's in line to become a citizen, and they basically give the counties the list of who to expect at their scheduled ceremonies. But in Ulster County, for example, typically about 30 people get sworn in at every ceremony, which they do once a month or once every 2 months. But they had actually requested to have as many as 100 new citizens sworn in because they had been told by USCIS that there were that many people on a monthly or bi-monthly basis in the county who were ready to take this final step towards citizenship. And so to then be told that, oh, hey, we're going to cancel your December ceremony because there aren't enough, doesn't really jive with what the same agency had said previously.
Yeah.
So I say that it's different in the details. The bigger picture here is that this is just the latest in kind of several attempts that USCIS has made to kind of mess with citizenship ceremonies and how they operate on the local level. I just talked about the cancellations of a couple of weeks ago, but they've also stopped reimbursing county clerk office staff for running these ceremonies, which had been longstanding practice. They've said that nonprofits can no longer register voters at these ceremonies, which had also been longstanding practice. And so it seems pretty clearly to be an attempt by the federal government to limit the number of people who are able to become new citizens in this country, to progress from being an immigrant to a citizen, and to prevent them from being able to register to vote, which is probably the main privilege of being a citizen in this country. So, you know, it's a big story and one that continues to develop. And it's still kind of a live story. You know, as we're talking here on Thursday afternoon, these ceremonies remain canceled. The clerks have not really been able to get many straightforward answers anyway, from the federal agency about this. There's going to be a press conference in Kingston tomorrow morning where State Senator Michelle Hinchey, the Ulster County Clerk Taylor Brook, and a number of other advocates are going to call on the Trump administration to reinstate the Ulster County ceremony. So yeah, just a lot going on.
Yeah, I'm just thinking what kind of, you know, ripple effects this might have, you know, by repeated cancellations, you know, have on immigrants just waiting, you know, become citizens. And in New York, if there's supposedly in the past having waiting lists, and now you have these whole bunch of people who's waiting to take this final step. And I would assume, this is my assumption, that then they can become targets of ICE because they haven't had full citizenship yet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's obviously a pretty scary time for immigrants in this country right now. And these are the people who are doing it, quote unquote, the right way. To get to the point of attending one of these naturalization ceremonies and taking the oath of allegiance, like the amount of sort of vetting that you have been through and the sort of bureaucratic pipeline that you have to travel through is intense, and it takes years and it takes a lot of money. And yeah, to just have that kind of yanked away at the last moment, you know, it's hard to square that with what the Trump administration has been saying about what they want, how they think immigration should work in this country. So yeah, I can only imagine that it only heightens the anxieties that immigrants must be feeling.
Yeah. Well, let's keep on the subject of immigration. And, you know, you have in your reporting in your Times Union that fresh data from the Deportation Data Project shows that ICE arrests in New York dipped in August and September after having a peak in the summer. But even with that slowdown, the agency is still on pace to arrest twice as many people this year as compared to last. You want to talk about this? What factors contributed to the rise in arrests early this summer, and why has there sort of been there a dip?
Yeah, it's hard to say exactly, you know, why there's been a dip in New York specifically. So this is data that has come out due to a lawsuit that was filed against the federal government by this research project called the Deportation Data Project. And, you know, I won't go all the way through the story. I encourage people to go read it because there's a lot of sort of data in it. But what it shows basically is that essentially what you said, there was a huge, huge spike over the summer. I'm looking at the chart now, there were 570 arrests in May that jumped up to 1364 in June and 1333 in July. And it's tapered back down to under 1,000 as of September and in mid-October. The data through October are not complete. But that still puts us on track to, I think it's like more than double the number of ICE arrests this year compared to last year. That's the pace that we're on. And that's kind of the main takeaway here. There was the senior policy attorney at the NYCLU told our reporter that no matter the periodic ups and downs, ICE is arresting immigrants at historically unprecedented rates across New York. And the, you know, what one thought about why there's been a little bit of a dip, at least relative to the summer, not relative to historic numbers over the past couple of months in the state of New York, is that there have been these really large scale operations in other states. You know, some of the, like, you know, there's been enforcement surges targeting specific cities, like the ICE Blitz in Chicago that started in September. There have been big operations in places like Texas and California, and now in Louisiana, of course. And so there's only so many ICE agents to go around. And another thing worth noting about these data are that they only include arrests made by ICE enforcement and removal operations, which are leading to the largest number of arrests. But that doesn't include Homeland Security investigations that ICE does. And it also doesn't include any arrests that Customs and Border Protection or U.S. Border Patrol are making, which, you know, you might say they don't typically make enforcement arrests. And that's historically true. But one sort of development of immigration enforcement that the Trump administration is pioneering is that they are increasingly using Border Patrol and Customs and Border Protection agents in the interior of the country to bolster immigration enforcement. And that's leading to even more arrests as they try to, you know, meet the quotas that the Trump administration is handing down.
Wow. And what does these numbers sort of suggest about the direction of ICE might be heading in the coming months?
It's hard to say. You know, our story is just looking at the numbers in New York. While they're down a little bit in recent months in New York, they're not down nationally. And I think that just indicates that there are enforcement surges in other states happening right now that are lightening the pressure a little bit, again, just relative to the summer in this state. But clearly, you know, I think that they're, you know, arresting a certain number of immigrants and deporting them has been a primary stated objective of this administration since January. And that is really only, the rhetoric around that is only heightened in the past couple of weeks since the aforementioned shooting of the two National Guards members. So yeah, I expect that this is something that's just going to continue to go up.
Wow. We're talking to Philip Pontuso, managing editor for the Times Union Hudson Valley branch, talking about what's going on in Hudson Valley, all the way from tax breaks to immigration. So, Philip, again, thank you so much for doing this. I do really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye, Phil. And that does it for the local edition on this Thursday evening. Again, thank you so much to our guest, Philip Pontuso, managing editor for the Times Union Hudson Valley Bureau. I've been your host, Patricio Robayo. Tomorrow we'll have a special guest, one of our news reporters, Genevieve Hartman. You heard her many stories throughout the year, throughout this past couple of months. She'll be hosting tomorrow for Friday. Again, I've been your host, Patricio Robayo. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, take care of yourself. And I'll talk to you soon.
Support comes from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Sign up for Radio Catskills' free weekly newsletter. Get the latest local news, culture, and things to do in your inbox every Friday. Stay connected and informed with Radio Catskills newsletter. Subscribe at WJFFradio.org.
Recently on Wait Wait, Zach Zimmerman marveled at the discovery of the largest spider web ever found.
Did it say some, really, really, that is some pig.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us to hear our commentary on the interesting creatures in the week's news, plus Andy Richter dishing about his recent run on Dancing with the Stars. That's Wait Wait from NPR.
Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.